Good morning, everybody, and welcome to FBC Radio Live. It's Wednesday, Tuesday. No idea what day it is, so don't disregard what I say. We had a little snafu trying to connect earlier, so we're a little bit behind, but we're happy to be here because we got a lot to talk about, of course, since it is Tuesday, folks. For real, Tuesday. We get to talk to John Sapicetti, and boy, have I been waiting for this. I think we both have, we all have, for the entire season, or for quite some time, because, Aaron Rodgers has failed to hold up his end of the bargain when it comes to facing Tom Brady in a playoff game, so we're finally going to get it this weekend, and we're going to talk to him about that, and of course, all of the happenings around the world of sports, especially the NFL. But before I do that, I got to bring in the guy himself. He is Mr. Rhode Island, Mr. Mike Debate. Mike, what's up, buddy?
La, I'm doing well, buddy. I am doing well. It is Tuesday, January 19th, and
thank you.
From a holiday weekend, and it's a yes, absolutely. We have to keep reminding people that it is Tuesday, January 19th, 2021, by the way. And
yes.
We continue to move on as the championship weekend is set. Conference championship weekend is set. NHL, NBA, a lot of NLB stories going on, some of which are, not for the faint of heart, unfortunately. But, a lot of stuff going around in the world of professional sports right now. And we get our sit down with Sap today, which is I'm looking forward to it. I brought the smelling salts. I brought the first aid kit. You guys, come out and, be ready to watch your low blows, watch your rabbit punches. And case of a knockdown, go to the corner I tell you to and stay there until I tell to come out.
No, don't worry. I feel like this is going to be a very laid back, not laid back, but more appreciation type episode for what we have in store for us this weekend. And but then again, who knows? We'll see what happens. There'll be one thing that triggers us. No, for real, it's going to be fun. We have two really great games to talk about. But before we do that, though, you said it's January 19th, 2021, and if my math is correct, that would make it 19 years since the infamous Snow Bowl, folks. Yes, that's right. In other words, people call it the Tuck Rule game because people didn't know the Tuck Rule because they're not paying attention. But in reality, it was Tom Brady's first playoff start and obviously win against the Oakland Raiders in the final game played at the old Foxborough Stadium. Certainly a memory that holds near and dear to our hearts, my friend.
Oh, without any question. There's a picture on my wall that adorns that moment, and it really does. It absolutely is a seminal moment in the history of the Patriots franchise. And for everybody that wants to get on the rule or whatever like that, it was the rule at the time. You can make your argument about whether or not you thought the rule was this, whatever it was the rule. So, it's hard to believe that that's what started the magical run. And then you look at Adam Vinatieri kicking not just one, but two field goals through the snow.
Unbelievable. If you listen to some people, they'll tell you that was the reason why Tom Brady has won 32 playoff games and counting. It's incredible that a play 19 years ago called correctly has such an impact. But no, fun fact about Mike, folks, right next to that picture on the wall with the Patriots is a poster of Marty McFly. Hand-drawn, too. So,
of course.
Yeah.
Hand-drawn, absolutely.
Yeah. By Mike.
Hand-drawn, that's so exactly
that,
it. Absolutely.
So it's not that good?
Absolutely.
But you can tell it's him. You can tell it's him.
Yep.
But
as a matter of fact, on one side, there's the picture of McFly. On the other side, there's a caricature of Sensei John Kreese of Cobra Kai. So, not bad. 17 minutes in.
Yeah, and, technically, it's only about 5 minutes in. So,
that's true. Yeah, it is. So, yeah, I jumped the
gun. the funny thing was is I was going to say that, but I was like, you know what? No, he hasn't brought it up yet. Let's see how long it takes him.
I got to get in now while I can.
Well, naturally, of course. It took you all of about 30 seconds after I brought up any sort of thing 80s related up. But yeah, obviously that's a great memory. We tend to enjoy it because unfortunately for Raiders fans, it really hasn't gotten much better since then. But hey, you know what? And this year, the Patriots are sitting at home too. So, But yeah, we're going to get into this conference championship weekend because, again, we do have some great games, some great matchups. And you know, let's face it, we got the four best quarterbacks of the entire season playing this weekend. You know, we've seen the 16 games play out. We've seen how the regular season unfolded. And I think it's pretty fair to say that these have been the four best quarterbacks all year. And I don't think it's any coincidence. So, like I said, we'll talk to John about that and really get into it. You did bring up baseball, and hey, the Mets have been in the news for a lot of reasons and many positive things. I think the entire Mets fan base is excited for the future with Steve Cohen as the owner and some of the moves that they have made. But today they fired their general manager after last night it came out that he had apparently sent a number of explicit messages to a former female reporter, I believe overseas. I can't remember. I think it was in Japan that she was based out of. Please correct me if I'm wrong. But that's not the point. The point is this guy apparently felt it was appropriate to send someone explicit pictures after they had continuously rejected their advances or what have you. Regardless, it was despicable just act on his part, and good for the Mets because they acted quickly and made the move and fired him. And I'd be very surprised if you see his name pop up in the news again or with another team, because again, it's I mean, it just amazes me, Mike. It really does, because like in no situation, in any situation, I just don't see how some person, certainly someone you would think, you know, has a good head on his shoulders since he became a general manager of a professional baseball team. What sense does it make to get rejected for whatever reason? This person's getting turned down, turned away, what have you. And then you think that, oh, you know what's a great idea? Let me show them my private area, because that's exactly what they want to see. And that's going to change. No, it's you think when you hear these stories that it's made up. I mean, sometimes, no, I'm not, you know what I'm trying to, or hopefully you know what I'm trying to say. You think this, it's so unbelievable.
Yeah, not that the accuser is making this up. It's like some news is making this up.
That's, exactly. You know, like, wait, no, that can't be real, right? And then you read it and you're like, what the hell's going on? You know what I mean? So yeah. So thank you. I'm glad you were, because I didn't want people to think that I was.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. No, this guy is a. There's a lot of words I'd like to use to describe him, but unfortunately, I like to try to keep a clean vocabulary on the show, so I don't want to say those words. But it's astonishing to me, and really good for the Mets for acting quickly, and Steve Cohen obviously. You know, again, if you're a Mets fan, you got to be happy with the direction that they're going, because, well, you're not mincing words, you're not playing games, you're not sitting there saying, oh, well, let's see how. No, there's hard evidence to suggest that this happened, and this woman, unfortunately, and this is the worst part about it all. I mean, don't forget about the acts, but the worst part about it is she left her career. She left this industry because of, obviously, this situation, and as she alluded to, others as well. And it's just a shame, because you see it all too often. I mean, we obviously have plenty of mutual followers and folks that we follow on Twitter that are females that work in the sports industry. And you hear stories like this all the time. It doesn't matter if you're a big shot or just getting started. It's unfortunate that stuff like this happens. And, you know, the end game is someone who perhaps went into the industry, you know, came into this job thinking, wow, you know, the sky's the limit, all of a sudden doesn't want anything to do with it because of unwanted advances from some person in power who, again, fortunately for the Mets, they acted and got rid of him. And I can't imagine you're going to see him anytime soon. And it's a shame that we have to talk about it and keep talking about this, because apparently no one ever learns. I mean, they're just animals out there, really. It's sickening. It's frustrating, and it's so confusing to me because that type of thought, I could never fathom having that type of thought process in order to make take that action like he did, and maybe that's where I'm confused because I'm like, how do you come to that conclusion? How do you think that that's appropriate? And it's just, you know. Again, I hope he gets what's coming to him, and you know, perhaps more than just a firing. So, and it would be well deserved. So,
yeah, I mean, there's no question about it. He will, and that, I think we're just scraping the tip of the iceberg when it comes to this story. And usually, that is the case when these matters come to the forefront. But I agree with you. The biggest takeaway from all of this is that no person in any walk of life should have to deal with these types of unwanted advances. It's not a part of their job description. It doesn't come with the territory. I've heard so many lame, idiotic, and really disheartening excuses made for behavior of this type so many times throughout the years. I am happy to see that it's getting less and less. I think people are becoming more aware. I think people are becoming more, understanding about the difficulties that a lot of female reporters do have in our business. And look, when it comes to skill set, when it comes to their ability to deliver news, to be accurate, to be on point, they're second to none when it comes to that. No one is arguing, those. And if anybody is arguing those points, then really, I mean, take a good look at yourself in the mirror because you're exposing yourself for what you truly are. But when it comes to something like what Jared Porter did, it's vile. It's disgusting. There's no question about it. And have to deal with unsolicited types of advances like that. Just because it doesn't happen in person or anything to that matter doesn't make it any less traumatizing, doesn't make it any less of an invasion of privacy or an invasion of innocence. Like you said, the female reporter said that she left this business for reasons of that nature. And that really is the true, disheartening fact of all of this, because we're losing great talent in this business because some people just can't seem to control themselves, or they believe that doing something like this is anything less than what it is, which is absolutely disgusting. So, you know, it's the Mets made the right move, unquestionably, but you know, you gotta wonder, this supposedly happened in 2016, you know, where was the vetting process? There's a lot that needs to go into this and behind it. So there is still a lot to uncover under the surface on this story, folks. It's not going away anytime soon, nor should it. But at the same time, you look at this and you just say, it's, you know, really, when are we going to learn? When are we all going to learn? This is just
apparently not, never.
yeah, exactly. And really, I mean, you would think that with a type of society that we're trying to, you know, put out now, where, you know, people are more aware, people are more accountable, there are many more ways in which this comes to the forefront and can be, for lack of a better term, have light shed upon it. It's it still amazes me. This thought process still enters people's heads, and it just I can't for the life of me understand it, but it is a shame. You feel bad for the reporter on the other end, because she didn't deserve this. She didn't ask for it, and it's just it's unwanted in every stretch that you could possibly imagine. But yeah, Porter has no business in a position of authority, whether it be baseball or really whether it be in any walk of life ever again. This is reprehensible, and it needs to be dealt with.
No, absolutely, and again, I imagine that we're not going to hear from him for quite some time. But then again, Brett Favre is doing Wrangler commercials and is celebrated everywhere he goes. And he once upon a time did pretty much the same exact thing. So I'm not going to sit here and try to pretend like that's something that is going to be, you know, obviously circumstances are a little bit different. Brett Favre, not that it excuses it. I'm just saying, well, Brett Favre was a bigger figure. You know, this is just, you know, a general manager that not too many people have probably heard of, you know, outside of Mets fans or anything like that. So, anyways, we'll kind of keep an eye on that, see how that all kind of unfolds and everything like that. But we do have our very, very special and distinguished guest, as we do each in every Tuesday here on FBC Radio Live, and that is Mr. John Sapicetti. And John, I apologize. I was going to queue up Big Time from Peter Gabriel to introduce you as you came onto the show, because you are Big Time, and we're ready to have a great time here on our weekly Tuesday chat. John, how you doing?
Good morning, guys. Good choice of music. Peter Gabriel is someone that I like, so that would have been a good choice. But Big Time, that can be looked at in a couple of different fashions, but I'll take it as a compliment.
Yeah, it was a compliment. It was definitely a compliment and meant to be funny, because we do think you're Big Time here, John, although you, I believe you are closer to the height of my good co-host here, Mike Debate, which I tend to kid him on his vertical limitations quite often on the show.
Well, that's not nice. I mean, I'm 5'9", which is about average for my age group. I act like my age group as if I'm like, you know, 5.5 years old and I'm in the top 48th percentile. But I'm 5'9". I mean, I wasn't aware that you're, you know, 6'5", like Tom
Brady.
You know
there's a bigger difference between 5'9 and 5'11 than 5'9 and like 4'9", right? You know that, right? The perception of it.
I'm really good with math. I am very, very good with math. I do understand that. But I never, ever kid anybody for their height, whether if they're extremely tall or extremely short, because that's nothing that they have anything to do with. You know, it's like I never make fun of people that are bald, because they really don't have anything to do with that. Being stupid, yes, you can make fun of someone for being stupid, because they can maybe correct that. But being height challenged is not something I ever bring up to people. Now, weight challenge can be different, and I've dealt with that for a long time, because I can do something about that. I can get off my fat, you know what, and lose some weight, which I have. I'm down to the lowest I've been in many years.
Oh, good. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. You know, you're excelling, and Aaron Rodgers is excelling. It's probably a good good time
it's
for you.
Connected.
Exactly.
It's connected.
Exactly. No, look, obviously, I mentioned it already before you got on the air, and we haven't really talked too much about championship weekend. Mike and I did yesterday, but it was more so recapping divisional weekend. I think, and I think it's very clear at this point, where the four teams left have had the four best quarterbacks all season. You know, from start to finish, they were the most consistent. They produced the most. And just, again, they were huge factors as to why their teams were where they were at. And people like, Josh, you're throwing – yeah, of course I'm throwing Josh Allen in the mix, because his improvement from his first two seasons till now is incredible. And he continues to add to that. So, again, I think it's not a coincidence that these are the last four teams. And I think – and not to put sum up an entire career or I don't want to put everything down to one game, but I think you saw firsthand the disparity in age from a 43-year-old Tom Brady and what a actual 40-year-old quarterback generally starts to look like in Drew Brees. You know, again, I'm not going to sit here and take victory laps because Drew Brees lost. I have my opinions about what his career ultimately is, and, you know, some people disagree. You know, it's unfortunate to see him go out kind of sputtering, but, you know, it is the playoffs, and, you know, look, we've kind of become used to it. So to me, it's no shock that these are the last four teams remaining. Despite some of my prognostications, these have been the four best quarterbacks.
Yeah, the only other quarterback you could throw into the discussion is Deshaun Watson, but his team went 4-12. He had a great year, and I think, you know, going forward, as far as value goes, the three best young quarterbacks, I'm going to take Rodgers and Brady out of the equation. If we're looking for, you know, 5-10 years down the road, Mahomes, Watson, Josh Allen would be the top three. Mm-hmm. And I also think Justin Herbert would be in that discussion, because I was so impressed with him as a rookie. And eventually we think Trevor Lawrence is going to be in that discussion. And it's, you know, it's pretty amazing. They're all in the AFC, which doesn't bode well for the Patriots, because they have no options at quarterback right now. But absolutely.
Unless. Unless...
No, don't bring that up.
No,
way in hell they're going to get this on Watson. I know Cal McNair is a boob, speaking of idiots. I can't see him trading his best player, his best asset to the New England Patriots. I know they have this kind of incestuous relationship with the Patriots where they keep hiring Patriots to come in and coach or be the GM or be the pastor or the life coach, whatever Jack Easterby is. I understand all of that. But, I mean, where Watson goes, if he does get traded, Miami makes a lot of sense since they have the third pick in the draft, and the Jets make sense because they have the second pick in the draft. Other teams have more options than the Patriots. So I would put that to rest. I don't think there's any way in hell Deshaun Watson plays for the Patriots next year.
How big of a kick in the you-know-what would it be if Houston has to get their own third overall pick back from Miami?
Exactly.
Look, I don't like the Dolphins because of my Patriots fandom, but I would have to sit there and just kind of laugh. And, it kind of just speaks to what the franchise, the Texans franchise has been. Obviously Bill O'Brien is not there anymore, and at least that gives you some hope, because I think he was part of a problem, but clearly there's an organizational problem here. And I came in just a couple weeks ago thinking, hey, Deshaun Watson is probably not going to get traded. This is just a pipe dream. But the more I think about it, the more I think he's going to ultimately end up getting traded because, well, I mean, why not? I mean, what's stopping Houston from making that move? We'll see. We'll see. We'll save that for another day. We don't want to get too much into that. Obviously, we do want to get Mike in here. I know Mike's taking his nap time for Mike. He's getting reared up for the rest of the day. Yeah, there's Mike. Yeah. I really got to get the Stooges.
John, good morning, buddy. How you doing?
Good morning, Mike. At least we know you don't have sleep apnea because we would have heard, gargling and all that stuff. Yeah. So we know you don't have that.
Well, his mic was muted. No, I really got to get the Stooges sleeping sound bite there. I think that would perfectly encapsulate what Mike goes through while we're talking. Then we just have to ring the dinner bell and he'll be ready to go. Championship weekend, guys. Look, we can sit here and debate like we did a couple of weeks ago, but we're not going to do that. We're really not, because at the end of the day, we're getting a matchup. Talking specifically the NFC, we'll get into AFC in just a minute. We're getting a matchup that we've been kind of waiting for a long time. Like I said, unfortunately, this will be my one jab. Unfortunately, Aaron Rodgers couldn't hold up his end of the bargain a couple times, so Brady had to come over to the NFC East or NFC.
Absolutely right. Yeah. Absolutely right, because this has been 10 years in the making, because I thought this was going to happen in 2010. The Packers got there. The Patriots were upset by the Jets. I thought it would happen in 2011. The Packers got upset by the Giants. Yep. I was sure it was going to happen in 2014.
Me too.
The Packers blew a 12-point lead against Seattle. Since then, I really haven't felt that it was going to happen again. I think the Packers were really good enough to get to the Super Bowl. They did make it to two NFC Championship games, but in 2016, Rodgers carried them, and then they fell short by only about three touchdowns against the Atlanta Falcons in the NFC Championship game. And last year, I didn't go into the San Francisco game in the NFC Championship game with any confidence. This year, I do. They're home. I think they are the most complete team in football right now. But this is 10 years in the making. We get to see, in my opinion, the two best quarterbacks of this decade. And the only other quarterback, really, that I would put into their class of this century, and that's now 20 years, is Peyton Manning. The three best quarterbacks of the 21st century are Brady, Manning, Rodgers, and Breeze finishes a distant fourth behind those guys, as was somewhat evident on Sunday. He just doesn't match up with those guys. He's just not as good. And that's not a knock against Drew Breeze. Heck, he's probably, I would say, the 12th best quarterback of the Super Bowl era. That's pretty damn good.
Well, and I brought this up the other day, not with you on the air, because I think I would remember that, but I try to put Breeze's career in perspective, because you know how everyone's, first ballot Hall of Famer, easy, first ballot, and I'm like, he's probably will get in first ballot, because I do think his reputation has exceeded his play, because at the end of the day, I think he's... you can't deny the statistical output, but I don't think that there's much difference between he and Phillip Rivers, and I don't think Phillip Rivers is a Hall of Famer. So
I disagree. I do think that he's better than Phillip Rivers.
No, no, I think he is better. But I'm saying, like, if you were going to make a case for Phillip Rivers, it would have to lean primarily on longevity and numbers.
Right.
You know, the touchdowns and the passing yards. Well, you know, if you're making a case for Drew Brees, well, obviously not MVPs. There's not going to be those All Pro and all that stuff. It's going to be the one Super Bowl, which in some ways can almost work against you, I feel like. And I don't believe that, but you know what I mean? Like, to only get to one Super Bowl when you're trying to match up to some of your peers,
right?
It can be a negative. So at the end of the day, it's
better than going to none, though, right?
We can agree on that. Oh, of course. Absolutely.
Okay, I just want to make sure. That's the people that still think that Montana's the greatest quarterback because he's 4-0 in the Super Bowl. I go, give me 6-3 in the Super Bowl over 4-0 any day of the week. That's why my man LeBron James gets the 6 titles. He surpasses Michael Jordan. Even on the people that don't want to believe that I think LeBron's better, getting to, say, 12 finals and winning 6 of them is better than just going to 6 and winning 6. This is not based on winning percentage. It's based in showing up. I mean, damn, Tom Brady's playing in his 14th championship game on Sunday. That just doesn't even make sense.
No.
I mean, like, most players don't even have careers that long, let alone playing 14 championship Sundays. That's insane.
It's funny because I was thinking about looking into that too this morning when I woke up. I was like, you know what? I wonder how many Hall of Fame careers were around 14 years. You know, because coincidentally, they're voting on the finalists today. We won't know, quote unquote, for a couple weeks, assuming no one, you know, talks about who got in, because it's supposed to be kept a secret for a couple of weeks. Which,
well, we know some Hall of Fame voters, right?
We know a couple of them, and actually got the privilege of
I know three quite well.
Yeah, we got the privilege of talking to David Baker last week, and obviously he's the president and CEO of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And you know, the idea is to, obviously they're voting today, and the idea is to keep that vote secret. I mean, we know. We already talked about Peyton Manning. I was going to say it earlier. He's going into Hall of Fame. That's a given. There's no doubt.
We can agree on that.
Yeah, we can definitely agree on that. Him and Charles Woodson are probably the two slam dunk candidates out of this group. And then again, you get into the age old tradition of debating who's worthy, who's not. You guys got guys like Clay Matthews, who is in his final year, John Lynch, who's been a finalist for 8 years now. So it's going to be interesting. Rondé Barber's another guy, obviously, who's an interesting case. But I don't want to get too sidetracked, but the point is, like, when I'm looking at Drew Brees, he's better than Rivers, definitely. That I don't say he's not, but I don't think the difference is as big as people think. And I think people have elevated, like, I've seen people say, Drew Brees is a top 5 quarterback of all time. I'm like, I just don't
know.
See, like, I understand, like, he had a really nice career. I don't value the 5,000 yard seasons as much as others do, because they came in 7 and 9 seasons. I mean, to me, that's not impressive. And I've made the case that there's kind of a tipping point in terms of passing yardage total for most quarterbacks. Again, guys like Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady, and we've seen it from other guys. Aaron Rodgers has thrown a lot of yards before. They can have successful seasons and still throw a lot of yards. But even at your most successful, there comes a time where you're just not throwing because you're always in the lead. So you can't, like,
exactly.
So once you get to a certain number of passing yards, it almost becomes counterproductive or a product of prior failures. And you know, look at Jameis Winston last year. I mean, the reason he threw for 5,000 yards was because he turned the ball over 40 some odd times, and he had to throw, and they were constantly behind. So, again, I think there's a happy medium where, like, the elite of the elite quarterbacks are going to go out and throw 5,000 yards, 50 touchdowns, and 8 interceptions, or in Mahomes' case, the 11, and, you know, Brady threw, 4,800 yards. So essentially it's the same thing. So to me, the passing yard total is great. It's nice. But at the same time, I think he averaged, 16, 17 interceptions over those 3 seasons, which...
Yeah, absolutely. You know. Well, let me make these comparisons with Drew Brees. I think, in a sense, he played in a dome, which I think is helpful, as did Peyton Manning. Our two guys never had the chance to have home games in a dome. This is the first time Brady's playing in nice weather in his 20th year. So... let's give Rodgers and Brady a lot of credit for playing in inclement weather, and it looks like it's going to be inclement weather Sunday for the NFC Championship game. That at kickoff time, it's going to be the high 20s with maybe snow. And you know what? The two kids from Northern California, and I can call them kids because I'm 57. Oh, yeah. The two kids from Northern California are the two best bad weather quarterbacks I've ever seen.
It's incredible.
They both play great in the snow. The best bad game, bad weather running back I ever saw was O.J. Simpson, also from the Bay Area. So maybe they know how to deal with snow in the Bay Area, even though they really never get it. But you can almost equate Drew Brees a little bit to Larry Walker, who's going into the Baseball Hall of Fame. His numbers were on steroids, and I'm not trying to be funny here, but his numbers exploded. He played in Colorado, which was a great hitter's park. So now he looks like a Hall of Famer. Or maybe Karl Malone in basketball, a guy who is the second all-time leading scorer in the history of the NBA, went to two finals, lost. At least Brees did win a championship, but somewhat similar. You know, a lot of really great numbers. But does anybody put Karl Malone in their top 10 list of all time? Heck no. I've got him more closer to 20 than 10. So I think that's more where he is at. You know, longevity, great. Always there playing, putting up numbers, but not quite at the level of guys that played in his era that were just quite frankly better. And that includes, obviously, Brady, Rodgers, and Manning.
Well, and exactly. And that I was just going to say to your point about Karl Malone is, like, as great as he was individually at times, there was always players that were better than him. And in this case, that's Drew Brees. So when people say, oh, Drew Brees is a first ballot Hall of Famer, I'm thinking, okay, well, you know, when he was playing, where did he rank among his peers? Well, at the very best, third. And I don't even know if I agree, because again, you're dealing with I would include Peyton Manning in this, because again, he played the majority of his career at the same time. You know, Tom Brady, obviously, Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers. I mean, so in my opinion, probably four, just based on that. You know, so at the best, he was the fourth best quarterback in this era. And then you can get into the debating the effectiveness of the other guys, like the Rivers and all the Roethlisbergers, this and that and the other. So all of a sudden, you're thinking about a guy who's kind of, you know, fifth, sixth. So to me, is that first ballot? Like, I get it. I'm not trying to pile on the guy. I think he had a great career. And the problem is we're sitting here talking about the dome. Well, these topics come up because you're comparing them to the best of the best of the best. So we're going to split hairs here. And if you're going to say, oh, Aaron Rodgers has had this advantage or Tom Brady has had this advantage, well, guess what, Peyton Manning and Drew Brees fans? We're going to bring up the dome because, yeah, that is a significant advantage when you think about it. I mean, to know that you're and consider this with on top of Drew Brees playing home in a dome, Atlanta has a dome. So, you know, you add in another extra game every season and then you know, look over to the Colts and Peyton Manning and the Texans had a dome. So, again, it's not the reason why they were great, but it was certainly an advantage. And, you know, when you're trying to make the case that they're as good as Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers or Peyton Manning or whatever, yeah, you're going to get knocked.
That's the holy trinity of quarterbacks in this century. And again, Elway and Marino retired in the late 90s and Montana retired in the mid 90s.
It was kind of a nice discussion. Transition. I mean, it was a very neat and tidy transition. Like the 90s ended. Tom Brady arrived. I mean, obviously Peyton Manning drafted in 98, but you know, again, the 2 year difference, that's not a big deal. They all played during the same essential stretch at the turn of the century. So,
I think those are the three guys for me. And again, I think if Rodgers wins his second Super Bowl, the way I rank these quarterbacks since the merger, right? So the Super Bowl era, I can't rate Unitas, Otto Graham and Sammy Baugh. Now, by the way, I've said this a million times. If you watch highlights of Johnny Unitas, he could have played today. He had a rocket for an arm. He was tough. He was smart. He did all that stuff. I'm sure he would have flourished in today's football where the receivers are able to run their routes easier than they used to, and their offensive linemen today can generally hold more than they could back then. So I think he certainly could play. But in terms of since the Super Bowl era, Brady is in his own league. Right below him in his own league also was Joe Montana. And then on the third level, I have Peyton Manning, John Elway, and I have Aaron Rodgers there because his longevity, numbers, MVPs, all that stuff. If he wins a second Super Bowl, he certainly will be on that level, I think, by everybody's standards. And he may actually creep up to number three ahead of Manning and Elway. Those would be the five best quarterbacks of the Super Bowl era. Then the next level would be Favre and Marino, maybe Steve Young. And then the level below that would be Drew Brees. So it's almost, it is pretty much like a pyramid, you know, one at the top. In this case, one more below him in Joe Montana, and then another three at another level. That's the way I would do my hierarchy of quarterbacks. But that's why I've said for the pretty much since midseason, this season is about Aaron Rodgers. He has the most to gain and the most to lose this year, because that second Super Bowl, you know, definitely elevates him clearly top five since the merger, and maybe even top three. But Brady's secure at number one. Yeah. Heck, you could put a couple of these guys' careers together and Brady's number one. And what he did Sunday, and I know I text you, and I'm sorry to be long-winded.
No, you're good.
There's four things that he does better than anyone. Three of them are very, very small details physically. First of all, we've admired what he does on quarterback sneaks, right? He scored a touchdown in the NFC Championship game on a quarterback sneak. I still can't believe he's ever been unsuccessful on a quarterback sneak. They must count in kneel downs, right, at the end of the game for that, because it seems like he always gets that first down or the touchdown when he wants it. He's understood that you take the snap and you wait a split second, and I think Troy Aikman pointed this out beautifully in that game Sunday. And by the way, Troy Aikman runs laps around Tony Romo. Tony Romo is a disgrace. I mean, I would rather listen to a high school kid on public access than Tony Romo. He has nothing. I don't learn a thing from Tony Romo. I do from Troy Aikman. I like Aikman a lot. But that quarterback sneak, he's perfected it. Remember Drew Bledsoe never figured out how to do that? And he's actually an inch taller and 20 pounds heavier than Tom Brady. He would just kind of run up into the center and be pushed back. So quarterback sneak, he's the best ever. Two things he does in the red or the gold zone or right at the goal line. When he throws a ball into the end zone, always to the back of the end zone, it's high. To the front of the end zone, it's low. We saw that on the touchdown pass to Leonard Fournette. If Fournette doesn't catch that, it's an incompletion. If he's high with that throw, it could be a deflection and an interception. He's mastered those two little details. And here's the bigger point, and I'm going to compare him to two all-time great basketball players, Bill Russell and LeBron James currently. He reads the game better than any quarterback. Do you realize in nine Super Bowls, Brady's offense has never scored a touchdown? But he's feeling out the game. He understands what's going on. He reads the defense. He knows what his defense is doing. He never forces things. Even in that game against New Orleans, he never really forced the issue because he knew, okay, my defense is zoned in here. They've created some turnovers. I don't have to be spectacular, but I'm not going to create any turnovers for my team. He reads the game beautifully. Bill Russell used to do that. Bill Russell talked about what was so important to winning. He said, look, I've got a great shooter in Sam Jones. I don't have to shoot. How can I make him a better shooter? I'm going to sprint to the front of the rim, draw the defense. Now he's going to be more open. That's just being so, so smart. LeBron James, we see that in the playoffs constantly. In the first quarter, I'll be sitting there going, geez, LeBron doesn't look like he's really into this tonight. And then in the second quarter, he's read the game. And then in the second half, he's read the game. And now by the fourth quarter, he got it all figured out. Same thing with Tom Brady. Those are the four things, some very small and one huge one in terms of personality and smarts, that make him the greatest quarterback ever. See, I'm being a nice guy.
I was going to say, for anyone who listened to our show a couple weeks ago,
I'm buttering you up.
Yeah. No, look, there's so many things I agree with you in what you just went, your monologue, which I liked it. Trust me, I pretty much agreed with everything from tiers of quarterbacks to helping one. Like, let me go to the way back before I forget it. Like, I agree with how you broke down the tiers. I happen to believe that the second Super Bowl would put him in that. I don't know if it would elevate him over Peyton Manning yet. Because again, I mean, Peyton with the five MVPs and the four Super Bowl appearances, it would be tough to do that. But I think it certainly puts him firmly in that ballpark. And I think the other tiers are perfect. So again, this does mean a lot more to Aaron Rodgers. But at the same time, it could really hurt him because, again, we know how narratives drive things. And if he goes out, they lose to Tom Brady. Well, guess what? And I will say this, though. I will say this. The one thing that could, this isn't realistic because I agree with you. I think Tom Brady's career is so firmly cemented that it baffles my mind that people would even suggest that this could be a bigger, who is this bigger for? It's clearly Aaron Rodgers, and that's not an insult to Aaron Rodgers. But If Tom Brady knocks off Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, and then beats Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl, that is going to be a pretty satisfying thing for folks like me when it comes to being a Brady honks. And certainly something that would, again, there's so many silly narratives out there that I can't believe have to be disproved, but, you know, people will do whatever they want to try to bring the guy down. But it's just, I see this as a great opportunity for Aaron Rodgers to elevate himself. This has nothing to do with Tom Brady, because regardless of what happens, Aaron Rodgers could go out, beat Tom Brady, go on and win a Super Bowl. It does nothing to impact his ranking relative to Brady's. Brady is firmly in placed in that number one spot, all that good stuff. But it can have a huge impact on how he's viewed, because like you said, all of a sudden he rises out of this one Super Bowl group, potentially looked at as an underachiever and just a nice quarterback in 20 years to, oh, he won multiple Super Bowls. And then you look at the statistical excellence, because again, stats are great. And these are the arguments I get in with all the time that, you know, just because Aaron Rodgers' EPA is 0.08 points higher in the playoffs doesn't mean he's a better playoff quarterback than Tom Brady. Like you can sit there and make our arguments using whatever numbers you want. That's the point. I can make any number say whatever thing I want. You can make whatever number say whatever you want. It's the combination of both. And Aaron Rodgers has that. It's just what he doesn't have is the resume to stack up to Tom Brady. So that's why those debates always, because they're just circles, because, well, you can sit there and say, like, oh, well, Aaron Rodgers, well, no, because Tom Brady's kind of lapped the field, and he's working on his second lap of the field, as crazy as that sounds, but it's kind of happening. So for Aaron Rodgers individually, though, a win could elevate him into a territory that, again, includes very few names, and, you know, it's going to be very hard for even the biggest Aaron Rodgers hater to deny that. So, so yeah, long story short, this is certainly a bigger bigger game for Aaron Rodgers, and certainly could have more of an impact on his career.
Hear what you said.
Sorry, Siri. My watch likes to talk to me. There's a second point you made, but I forgot what it was, but I know I agreed.
Hey, Siri just gave me a way to interject into all this, guys.
Oh, perfect.
Hi, Mike.
I forgot you were here.
I'm sorry. I did not understand what you said.
That's what I'm going to do now during the segment. That's it. See, Siri gave me an interjection.
Yeah.
By the way, you guys are being very well behaved. I told Ian beforehand, you know, I gave him the instructions. I told him, you know, watch your punches, watch your kidney punches, low blows, you know, you know. But you guys are doing a good job.
I don't have to
give the Johnny Lawrence quiet. You know?
I was going to say, this is the civil stage of Charlie McDennis, where we're all standing around drinking wine and being eloquent. But yeah, it's nice to hear from you, Mike.
Yeah, I am still awake, believe it or not.
Yeah. No, we have been very civil. And again, I feel bad because John made another great point. I just don't remember what it was because I've been talking for so long. But I know I agreed with it. I know I agreed with it because we're talking about Rodgers. We're talking about Brady. We know how I feel about who Brady is now. I can still, we're not going to debate this because at this point it's splitting hairs. I still think he's the best in the league. I think Aaron Rodgers is literally right there. So we're getting, in my opinion, a matchup of the two best quarterbacks in the league. I'll ask you though, John. Are you concerned? And it isn't exactly like the 49ers, but are you concerned that this Packers team could have a fatal flaw against a Bucs team that, when they're on top and when they're playing their game defensively, they're a pretty formidable group? Now, again, we've seen them look great one series and then forget how to tackle the next. I think that's happening less and less as we progress through this season. But it's certainly always a concern, and there's always, you know, the idea that discipline issues could rear their ugly head again. But from a Packers point of view, do you see this as potentially a mismatch for this Packers team? Not necessarily for Aaron Rodgers, but just the Packers team in general, because you take away Devontae Adams and really limit what he can do, that might pose some problems across the board. We saw how great Devin White played in that game. So, oh yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, but good luck with taking Devontae Adams away because they put not on every play did they have Jalen Ramsey on him, but they move him around so much because he can play literally any position on the field among the receivers group. So they get him in motion. They run about 75% motion. They scheme up a lot of things to get him open. Those other receivers almost feel like the players on the Lakers. You know, like the Lakers don't have a third best player. They have LeBron, Anthony Davis, and then one night it's Kuzma, one night it's Schroeder, one night it's someone else. I almost feel that way with the Packers' other receivers, whether it's Lazard, MVS, or EQ. One of those guys steps up, and we saw all three have nice contributions on Saturday against the Rams, and Tonyan's become a really good tight end. But the key with Green Bay is they have three legitimate running backs, and they are committed to running the football, very good at it. Now, Tampa's good at stopping the run, although lately they haven't been as good as they were earlier in the season. That was a weird game back in Week 6. You remember the Packers were up 10-0, and I thought they were in control of the game. And then Aaron throws a pick six, which he never throws. I think he's thrown three in his entire career. And then he almost throws another one, which brings the ball back to like the 2-yard line, which I'm like, what the hell is going on? Next thing you know, a 10-0 lead is a 14-10 deficit. And they never really recovered from that. Bakhtiari got hurt in that game. He's out, but at least now you've got you know, several weeks to prepare for not having the best offensive lineman, arguably, in the sport. Devontae Adams was coming off an injury. And this is the second year in a row that the Packers played like crap off their bye week. They did the same thing last year and got blown out by the 49ers. They did it this year coming off the bye week, getting blown out by Tampa. The game's going to be in Green Bay. And now Brady's going to eat this up. The snow, the wind, the whatever the conditions are, Brady's not going to have a problem. But the rest of that team, do we know what they've ever done in the snow? And it's not just on offense, it's defense as well. I think we're going to have a hell of a game. Because Green Bay's better than they were last year, and I think San Francisco is better than Tampa in totality. If you had Tom Brady on last year's San Francisco team,
they win the Super
Bowl. You may have been looking at an undefeated team. Yeah,
they would have won that Super Bowl, no doubt.
Right. I mean, there's no question because he's not going to poop his pants in the fourth quarter, and he's not going to miss wide open guys, and that's why the 49ers were interested in Brady this offseason. They probably should have gone all in and give Tampa credit for getting that job done. So. Yeah, I think it's going to be I don't see a blowout on either side because how the hell do you blow Tom Brady out, right? I mean, even if he's down three touchdowns, he's not going to give up. And I don't think – Green Bay's playing so well right now. I think that they'll – I think it's going to be a good game. I do think Green Bay's going to win. They're at home. Here's just another nugget that I have out there that Brady's like the fourth quarterback of all the great quarterbacks that's gone to a new team after a long, illustrious career. Montana went from San Francisco to Kansas City, lost in the AFC Championship game. Drew Brees went from San Diego to New Orleans, first year in New Orleans, lost in the AFC Championship game. Peyton Manning, first year in Denver, lost in the divisional round. Brett Favre, first year in Minnesota, loses the NFC Championship game. So, you know, I'm a big believer in trends, so maybe that's the trend. Great quarterback goes to a new team, in this case, different conference, gets that far. But I think the Packers are the best team in football right now, at least about special teams, but Tampa special teams aren't good either, so that's almost like a wash. So I think it's gonna be a good game, and I do think the Packers are a slightly better team because they seem to be more complete than Tampa, but I am scared you know what that Tom Brady's on the other sideline, question.
Well, and here's the thing, we're gonna have to get you back later in the week because we've blown past our time. I can't believe it's been such a pleasure, so civil and so incredible that I just didn't even realize we're already past 10 o'clock. So maybe we can get you back on later this week and we can finish up this conversation.
Mike you got to get in Ian's ear that we got to have this point counterpoint podcast, so I you get me off the morning show because I want, Mike is so good. He should be heard a lot more than certainly is on Tuesday morning.
I'm heard regularly.
I can't, just like quarterbacks in New England can't make more than the coach. Cause we all know that's true, right?
Right.
Mike can't say more than me, so he has to be quiet during these episodes. No,
listen to this, John. I got no respect. It's unbelievable. I got no respect.
Can I just tell a real quick old story?
Sure.
Because I'm old. Did you ever see the movie The Towering Inferno? I mean, it came out in like 1974. It was one of the first big disaster movies. So Paul Newman and Steve McQueen were the co-stars. And at that time, they were probably equal stars. Newman, the better actor. McQueen, a great actor as well, but not to the level of Paul Newman. They were huge stars. And their agents were negotiating which actor had more lines, literally more words on the script, and also how they were going to lay out their names on the marquee. And if you ever look at it, one actor is to the left, one actor is to the right in terms of their name, but the one on the right is a little bit higher, so they kind of share top billing. So that's like you and Mike at this point.
I like it. I like it. We won't discuss who is who in this situation.
Comparing Ian and myself to Steve McQueen and Paul Newman, that's pretty hefty.
That's really good.
Yeah, like I said, if people listen to our show 2 weeks ago, their jaws are on the floor right now listening to the civility and the kindness being thrown back and forth here. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in. We hope it was as entertaining to you as it was to us. And we will definitely try to get John back on later in the week so we can kind of finish up this conversation. But until then, have a great day, folks. We will be back, Mike and I, tomorrow at 9 a.m. Stay tuned. We got some great action coming up. And don't worry, later this week, you're going to hear the speech, the essay that we're going to write for Dylan and Ross as they mourn the loss of Drew Brees' NFL career. Folks, have a great day, and we'll talk tomorrow.